advisement.
She was appointed.
Now, you were appointed, were you not, to represent Mr. Greenow? You have the deep thanks of the court for the fine job that you have done in representing your client. Case number two is appeal number 32988, and that is the United States of America versus James R. Turcotte. Mr. Sarafa. Good morning.
Good morning. May it please the court, my name is Derek Sarafa, and I represent the appellant in this case, Mr. James Turcotte. The first issue I would like to address is whether the district court erred in failing to instruct the jury that in order to convict Mr. Turcotte of a violation of the Controlled Substance Analog Act, he had to know that the substance which he possessed was in fact an analog of a controlled substance. Your Honors, the substances which we are talking about in this case, in the first instance, they are analogs. That is what Mr. Turcotte was charged with distributing.
Let me ask you something. I know that you've argued in the briefs that the Controlled Substance Analog Act is unconstitutional in part because the general public can't reasonably determine what constitutes a controlled substance analog. But here's what I'm wondering. Why does it matter in Mr. Turcotte's case? His business's website indicated that he knew the substance was illegal and that it was a substitute for GHB. He certainly had no trouble determining that the substance was illegal.
Your Honor, respectfully, there was evidence in the record from which the jury could have concluded that Mr. Turcotte knew that GBL was an analog of GHB. However, there was also evidence in the record from which the jury could have concluded that he did not believe that GBL was an analog of GHB. His sworn testimony, he testified on at least five or six occasions that he did not know of any illegality of the substance. And had they credited that testimony, then the jury could have concluded that Mr. Turcotte did not know GBL was an analog of GHB, and they could have acquitted him on that basis, but only if the district court would have given the proper jury instruction, which it didn't do, because the court's jury instruction did not require that Mr. Turcotte have knowledge that GBL was an analog of GHB. That's the perplexing thing here. The government put on the evidence. The government knew that they had to prove that because it was an element of the offense, that they had to prove he had knowledge that it was an analog, and yet when it came time to do the jury instructions, they specifically chose an instruction, or the court gave an instruction, which did not include a requirement that he know it was an analog. Mr. Turcotte repeatedly objected to the instruction, and the instruction was given over his objection. Now, the court in United States versus Hussein, the First Circuit case from 2003, I think that opinion is on all fours with this case.
Let's say that Judge Moran did indeed get it wrong. Let's just argue that for a moment. Wouldn't the error in any at any rate be harmless? Because he sold the GBL through this website that states that the substance contained in this verve were illegal, and he did that nationwide. And what I still can't get is why that isn't evidence of Turcotte's knowledge at any level. In other words, that he knows he possesses a controlled substance, and he knows it contains GBL, and his own brief admitted that it is sufficient that the defendant knew it was some kind of prohibited drug.
Your Honor, I agree that that is evidence, and all I'm saying is that it's clearly contradicted by other evidence on the record, including Mr. Turcotte's sworn testimony. What you're saying, Your Honor, is that the jury could have concluded that. I agree. They could have concluded that, but they weren't instructed on that point, so they never reached that issue, right? I mean, the instruction is very clear. Here's what the instruction required, that he knew that he possessed the substance, GBL, that he intended to distribute the substance, GBL. And the third part of the instruction states that, and I quote, that mixtures containing GBL are an analog of GHB, a Schedule I controlled substance. It does not say that Mr. Turcotte must have known that GBL was an analog of GHB. So I agree with Your Honor. It is possible they could have concluded that. It's also possible they could have fully credited his testimony, and they could have concluded to the exact opposite. But the error here, Your Honor, is that the court never instructed on that issue. Now, the case in United States versus Hussein is very instructive here, because in that case, the defendant was convicted of possessing khat, spelled K-A-H-T, which is a naturally occurring substance containing cathinone, which is a Schedule I substance. In that case, the court found that the defendant either had to know that the khat contained cathinone, or he had to know that he was actually dealing with some type of a prohibited substance. And here's what the court said. In the prosecution for cocaine possession, it is ordinarily enough for the prosecution to prove that the defendant knew he possessed cocaine without proving additionally that he knew the cocaine to be a controlled substance. That's what the government cites in their brief, and we agree with that statement. But here's what the court continued on to state. But khat, unlike cocaine, is not a controlled substance per se, meaning it's not in the schedules, and the government concedes that it is not enough to show that the appellant knowingly possessed khat. That is what the court stated in that case. Here you're dealing with a substance, just so the statutory organization is clear. What's prohibited is quote-unquote controlled substance analogs. Usually when you're dealing with regular controlled substance, they're in schedules, and it's just lists of cocaine, heroin, whatever, that's prohibited. Here, there's no such list. There's just a definition for what a controlled substance analog is. Okay, BD and GBL are not included on any schedule. So the only way that Mr. Turcotte could be criminally liable here is if the jury makes a finding that GBL is an analog of GHB. It's not even something which is a fact prior to the time that the jury makes that determination. And given that fact, it's clearly an element of the offense. And under the United States Supreme Court's authority and well-established criminal law, the government has the burden of showing mens rea for all of the elements of the offense. And, Your Honors, there's no dispute here that the elements of the offense are, number one, there shouldn't be a dispute, number one, that GBL was chemically substantially similar to GHB, and either that it had a similar effect on the central nervous system, or it was intended to have such an effect. Those were elements of the offense. They have to prove knowledge as to those elements. They put on the evidence which they thought supported it, and yet the district court did not instruct on this point, and that was clearly prejudicial to Mr. Turcotte.
Well, the jury found that. The jury found that it qualified under two of those criteria, didn't it not?
I think Your Honor is referring to the special verdict form?
Yeah.
Yes. Absolutely not, Your Honor. That's not sufficient, and here's why. The jury found in the special verdict form, and specifically, if you look at the special verdict form, what the government's saying is that, and here's what it says, is that this alone is sufficient to indicate that Mr. Turcotte had knowledge that it was a controlled substance analog.
Now you're talking about knowledge again, but I'm talking about whether or not this is an analog.
Right. There's two different.
As long as you have that special jury verdict, you've established that it's an analog, have you not?
You have, Your Honor. You've established it's an analog, but that's a totally different inquiry than whether or not Mr. Turcotte had knowledge that it was an analog.
But I thought you were also arguing that that under the test that the district court used, it wasn't shown, and I had the same question about that as Judge Cudahy, that by the time you have the special verdict forms, you have even the findings on the record that you think ought to be there.
No, I'll tell you, that's not true, Your Honor. I'll tell you why. The only one of those three prongs, okay, which even mentions that the defendant's knowledge in any way, is only the third one, which that is that it either had the same effect or he intended it to have the same effect.
Right, but first, first of all, do we have a substance that is under this statute? There's the chemical similarity part of the test, and then there's either the actual effect or, if you will, intended effect, you know, just to summarize. And by the time you have the special verdict forms, you do have a finding on chemical similarity and you have a finding on the effect on the body, right?
Your Honor, you only have that insofar as it relates to whether or not GBL is an analog of GHB.
Right, and it is.
What you do not have is anything in the special verdict form which indicates that Mr. Turcotte, for example, had knowledge of the chemical.
That's a different element of the case, though. I'm just trying to narrow down your argument as compared
to all the arguments
you're making.
We don't dispute that using the special verdict form, the government prove for the purposes of the conviction that it was an analog. We have other reasons why we say it can't be an analog and so forth. But, yes.
I thought you were arguing in your brief that it wasn't an analog because he didn't use the right jury instruction.
That's what I thought, too. This argument that starts at page 17, the court erred by instructing the jury to interpret the act in the disjunctive. But from what you're now saying, it doesn't sound to me like you're...
No, that is true.
Sticking with that.
No, we do stick with that point. That's a totally separate argument from what I'm talking about the knowledge instruction. There's two instructions that were in error.
You keep bringing knowledge in now. They're separate questions, I agree. Now, which one of the separate questions are you arguing?
Your Honor, the first argument, the argument that I started off addressing today, is whether the district court erred in failing to give an instruction that Mr. Turcotte had to have knowledge that the substance he possessed was an analog of a controlled substance.
Right, and Judge Rovner's question to you, which is one I had as well, is even if we were to agree with you that the instruction was error, why isn't it harmless error in light of the website, basically?
If your honors want to effectively serve as the jury, you could determine that.
Well, sometimes error is found to be harmless.
Your Honor, you would have to disregard, you would have to assess Mr. Turcotte's credibility from the cold record, and you would have to totally disregard his testimony in order to so find. There is no other way that you could make that determination other than to totally disregard his testimony. Now, this court can do whatever it wants, but typically
but
the court
but
does...
How then do we factor in the fact that the company website stated that the substance is illegal? How do we factor that into all of this?
My position, Your Honor, is that the court doesn't factor it in because that's left for the jury to decide whether it believes what was said on the website or whether Mr. Turcotte put that there or whether it believed his sworn testimony, which he said six times, that he did not believe that the substance was illegal. Your Honors may
But did he disclaim any responsibility for putting that statement on his own website?
I don't specifically know whether he disclaimed that responsibility, but the record is very clear on his testimony, what his testimony was, that he had no idea, never heard of GBL, didn't know that it was illegal, and that was his testimony. Now,
but how is that different from any other defendant that gets up and in the face of something that perhaps, was on a billboard that he passed every single day and that he paid to have put up and gives some kind of opposite testimony? How does that differ?
Your Honor, I don't know how... I mean, when you say how does it differ... There's contradictory evidence on the record on whether or not he knew it was illegal. And all I'm saying is that if Your Honors want to, you would have to disregard his testimony. You have to disregard his sworn testimony in order to find this error was harmless.
Specifically find that Turcotte intended or represented that GBL had similar physiological effects as GHB?
They did, but they did not specifically find, Your Honor, that he had knowledge of the chemical substantial similarity. If you look at the special verdict form, it's very clear. So that
no, but you answered my question is yes. Is that right?
For that one prong of what is an analog, but that doesn't take into account the other prong, which is substantially similar chemically.
You know, I know we're into your rebuttal time, but I did not understand one of your arguments, and that was the one regarding dietary supplements. Because let's take, for instance, if a person markets marijuana, which is, of course, a natural plant substance, as a food additive, then it's exempt from regulation as a drug under federal law? Is that, I mean...
No, I think that that our central point on the scheduling, Your Honor, is that you cannot, it's impossible to simultaneously have a Schedule III and a Schedule I substance. And that's what the government's now claiming here, Your Honors. They're trying to get Your Honors to convict. What they convicted Mr. Turcotte on was a violation of a Schedule I substance. But since Xyrem, which is a GHB substance, has been approved for the treatment of narcolepsy, that necessarily means that GHB must be a Schedule III substance. Schedule III substances have some accepted medical uses. Schedule I substances do not have any accepted medical uses. So our key point here is, how can you possibly say that it's both? You can't. It's totally contradictory. And since we know that the FDA has approved Xyrem, and we know for a fact it must be, therefore, a Schedule III substance, our key point here is that it cannot be a Schedule I substance.
Okay.
I'm sorry, does it?
Well, I'll think about it.
Okay. That's all I ask. Thank you.
Thank you. Good morning, Ms. Bickert.
Good morning. Excuse me. May it please the Court, Monica Bickert on behalf of the United States.
Bit of a mess, isn't it?
Well, there is no reversible error here, Your Honor.
Wait a minute, Ms. Bickert. I mean, I want to... it's this knowledge part of the case that troubles me the most, to be honest, because of precisely what Mr. Sarafa just said, or said repeatedly, namely that even though there is certainly evidence that the government had to show that Mr. Turcotte knew that this was an analog of a controlled substance, there's also evidence on the other side. Unless you want this court to start getting into credibility determinations, which usually the government is asking us not to do because juries believe who they believe, the jury was never asked to focus on resolving this dispute, and particularly with analog, the chemical sophistication of even figuring out that something is an analog is pretty significant. You know, what's the controlled substance, what's Schedule I, what's Schedule II, you know, what's the slight chemical difference that makes it a Schedule III and off the charts altogether. I mean, there are so many things here, and I think to assume that these analog cases proceed exactly the same way as the schedule cases go is a mistake.
The court doesn't have to get into a credibility determination, Your Honor, and here's why. If the analog statute is constitutional and is not vague, and we submit that it is constitutional and case law has held that it is constitutional, then in fact the defendant is on notice that GBL as an analog of GHB is a prohibited drug. The case law is clear that in such circumstances, all that the government need prove and all the jury need find is that the defendant knowingly possessed GBL. And in fact, the Second Circuit in Ansaldi...
I don't know about that. I mean, he has to know... And actually, you're going one step beyond the GBL, too. The GBL is the analog of the GHB, right?
Correct.
I don't know. It's a lot of chemical sophistication that you're asking people to have. One change in a bond, and all of a sudden it might be a Schedule III.
The Second Circuit in Ansaldi does address this very issue, Your Honor. And
what case are you talking about?
Ansaldi. It's A-N-S-A-L-D-I. It's mentioned in the government's brief. In Ansaldi, the defendants, in fact, this is a Second Circuit case, but the defendants who were convicted in that case were convicted of selling Verve, the same substance that the defendant here was convicted of selling, and the defendants there were convicted of knowingly possessing with intent to distribute GBL. The Second Circuit noted that it's an interesting question. I'm reading from the opinion here. It's an interesting question under which circumstances a statute that depends on the resolution of a factual question about which reasonable juries can disagree is specific enough to withstand a vagueness challenge. And here they were discussing whether or not the statute is vague. But then they said that here, even though the jury had to make a determination that, in fact, GBL was an analog, and this required the jury to look at the chemical structure, there was, an independent basis, the statute, a fact that was independent of the jury's confirmation, that was clear enough to have put an ordinary person on notice of the illegality of the sale of GBL for human consumption.
Suppose hypothetically that a health supplement store owner orders a new product from his distributor. Unbeknownst to him, the week after he orders this product, the government decides it's an analog to an illegal substance. Is he criminally liable? In other words, does he have an obligation to hire experts to investigate whether new products he might order are analogs? Does he have a continuing obligation to review his stock periodically to make sure he sells no analogs to substances that may have been newly added to Schedule 1 or Schedule 2?
Your Honor, because ignorance of the law is no excuse, when the defendant is put on notice that a drug is becoming illegal, which in this case the defendant was on notice as of February 18, 2000, when Congress passed the Date Rape Drug Prohibition Act, yes, the defendant has the obligation to comply with the law. Here, the jury found that the defendant knowingly possessed GBL and that he intended it for human consumption, and as Your Honor pointed out during appellant's argument, the jury here made an additional finding because they looked at the definition of the analog statute under 80232.
Did he know that it was an analog? Isn't that the issue?
He didn't have to know that it was
an
analog, Your Honor, because he
was
on notice.
That's the thing that troubles me. He knew it was what it was, and that's what the district court said is enough. In the other cases, we normally say it's enough to know it's a controlled substance, but the term controlled substance already means it's the kind of thing you can't have. And that's what troubles me here. Doesn't he need to know that there's something wrong with his having or selling or what have you this substance?
Yes. He does not need, the jury does not need to find.
Why not? I mean, since the jury does need to find that, in normal cases, the government has to prove that the person knows he has a controlled substance.
Because, Your Honor, the ignorance of the law is no excuse.
Why does the government have to prove in the other cases, then, that the person knows he has a controlled substance?
In the other cases, the government has to prove that the defendant knows that he possesses a drug and that the drug is some kind of prohibited drug.
Why not the same here? The defendant has to know that it's some kind of prohibited substance.
He does not.
About ignorance of the law is
no dispute.
He has to
know that it's an analog.
He has to know it's an analog.
He does not need to know that it is a prohibited drug. He is put on notice. He has constructive notice because
then
of the statute.
Then why is the other rule what it is? Why do we say somebody has to know that he has a controlled substance? You have to know you have cocaine. You have to know you have heroin. If somebody gives you, a bag of stuff and says, I'm giving you some baking powder so that you can gargle, and it turns out to be cocaine, your position is, oh, tough luck. The person's liable anyway.
The government does not need to prove in other cases that the defendant knows that cocaine is illegal or knows that heroin is illegal.
No, but they do have to prove that they know that they have something that's a controlled substance. Or are you going to convict my person with the bag of cocaine who's told I'm giving you some baking powder for your sore throat?
No, the defendant in a cocaine case,
he has to know it's cocaine.
Has to know that it is cocaine.
Right, and so why not here? Why don't you have to know that it's a controlled substance?
Just as a person in the cocaine case does not need to know that cocaine is a controlled substance, nor does the defendant here need to know that GBL is a controlled substance. He need only know that he possesses GBL. Just as in the cocaine case, the defendant must know that he possesses cocaine.
Why doesn't he have to know that he's got a controlled substance analog? That's what GBL is. It's not a controlled substance. It's
for the same reason,
practically anything could be an analog.
And the purpose of the of submitting this to the jury is to determine whether it is such a thing. How is he ex ante supposed to know that it is such a thing if the jury has to determine that in this case?
For the same reason that he would ex ante have to know that it is illegal for him to possess cocaine, because
no,
the statute puts him on notice.
No, but cocaine is a clearly defined substance, and I think what Judge Cudahy is putting his finger on is the fact that if you don't even know that something is an analog, think of the number of chemical variations. I don't know if you're a chemist, but the number of chemical variations of, let's say, the opiates there are. There are many, many, many opiates, some of which are controlled, some of which are lesser controlled, some of which are, you know, codeine is kind of an over-the-counter, not quite over-the-counter, but a lower level of prescription medication. If you don't know until a jury has found that it's the case, that you have an analog, that's pretty poor notice under the statute. It's not like saying heroin, cocaine, methamphetamine, marijuana, etc. Those are what they are.
That's what the Second Circuit said in
Assault. The problem is there could be 1,000 analogs to GHB. There could be 1,000 analogs to other things. And you're supposed to know beforehand what they all are?
That's what the Second Circuit said in Ansaldi when they said that the
but
jury
I don't know
having
if the Second Circuit is right. Why don't you argue?
You've added another
whether they're
level.
Right.
You've added an entirely new level, and one that makes a chemist or a pharmacologist out of the person who has been indicted. And now, of course, convicted.
Well, then, Your Honor, the issue becomes, is the statute sufficient notice? Is it unconstitutionally vague? And the Second
Circuit,
but not...
And maybe it isn't. If there's a knowledge requirement, the statute sounds like it could proceed quite effectively, as long as you make sure that people know that the thing they're dealing with falls within the definition.
A number of circuits, not just the Second Circuit, have addressed this argument and have found that the statute is not unconstitutionally vague.
No, and I'm saying I wouldn't either, as long as there was a knowledge requirement. I don't think the statute as a whole has to fall.
These other circuits, as we set forth in our brief, have found that even without a separate knowledge requirement, the statute, the analog statute, on its face, is not unconstitutionally vague. Therefore, there would be no separate knowledge requirement here. It is no different from any other analog case or the cocaine case, for that matter. I'm sorry, Your Honor.
No, you finish your thought and then I'll...
Because it appears that I'm running out of time, I'll just also add that even if the instruction were an error here, which the government submits it is not, but even if it were, it would be harmless error because, as Your Honor has pointed out, there was an overwhelming abundance of evidence that the defendant knew that, in fact, GBL was an illegal substance.
Now, let's just talk about this unpublished decision from Indiana, this Niemöller, for a moment. Because the government agreed that the statute at issue here should be read in the conjunctive. And you seem to skirt the issue by claiming it doesn't matter. But if we decide that it does indeed matter, does the government have a consistent position on this question?
Your Honor, the government takes no position as to whether or not the act should be read in the conjunctive or disjunctive. The district court didn't decide it. The circuit court here need not decide it. In fact, the Seventh Circuit has not decided it. And it's not an issue in this case because the defendant was not convicted on the basis of BD.
So is that a no to Judge Rovner's question? Judge Rovner asked you, has the Solicitor General taken a position? I take it from your answer, the answer is no.
So far as I know, we do not take a position.
Well, there isn't any authority to this disjunctive, really, is there? Every court that's looked at it says conjunctive, isn't it?
And it's not an issue in this case because the defendant was not convicted on that basis.
It may not be. That's my point.
Well, Your Honor, the only way it would be an issue is if he had been convicted of on the BD, possessing with the intent to distribute BD. In fact, the pre-sentence report, the sentencing transcript, the judge's order denying the defendant's post-trial motions, and even the defendant on page 41 of his opening brief make clear that the jury did not find that BD was a controlled substance analog, and therefore the convictions for count 2 and 5 were not in any way based on a finding that BD was a controlled substance analog.
But it's possible. There's so many vagaries here. It's possible that the vagaries of the Controlled Analog Substance Act might pose constitutional problems for us.
It sounds like the only issue as I'm hearing from the court, is whether or not the statute is unconstitutionally vague on its face. And if that is the issue, I would again refer the court to the case law that's come out from a number of other circuits saying that the statute itself at 21 U.S.C. 80232, which is the analog provision, on its face gives defendants enough notice of what is or isn't an analog in its definition, and that when that's coupled with the FDA's final rule of April 2000, there is more than enough evidence to show, to put an ordinary person on notice that these analogs, GBL in particular, are illegal to possess. In fact, again, if I refer to Ansaldi, and just because of the language here, but certainly other courts are saying the same thing, the court said, regardless of any other ways in which the laws governing controlled substance might be vague, there is one thing they make perfectly clear. The sale of GBL for human consumption is illegal. Here, that's what the defendant admitted to doing.
Well, you know, I mean, I suppose that it might be legitimate for the government to place a burden of investigation on supplement dealers to make certain that their wares are legal. But to the extent that, you know, experts might be disagreeing here on chemical structure and effect, then the statute could be unconstitutionally vague, you know, as applied to certain substances. So it's a pretty difficult issue.
We would ask that this court apply the same analysis that other circuits have applied and uphold the constitutionality of the statute. Looking, it appears that my time is out, so I'll just say in summary that the government submits that there is no reversible error and that this court should affirm the judgment of the district court. Thank you.
How much time? How much? No time. I will give you an extra minute. We badgered you.
Thank you, Your Honor. Your Honor, I would like to direct the court to transcript pages 1396 and 1397, in which Mr. Turcotte gives the following testimony. At any time that he offered you the opportunity to become involved in the Internet, did you then or did you ever have any knowledge at all that this was an illegally banned substance? No, sir. Then questioning about who did the website. The original website was done by my friend Robert and then Brian, then was taught by Robert how to make changes and inputs into the website. Had the website been set up to your knowledge by March of 2002? Yes, sir. Did you have anything to do with setting up the website? No, sir. Did you have anything to do with what appeared on the website? No, sir. Therefore, Mr. Turcotte clearly disavowed any responsibility for the information that was on the website that Your Honors referred to.
Did anybody ask him whether he knew that GBL was an analog of GBH?
Your Honor, I think that his knowledge of GBL was so, he had so little knowledge of GBL, it wasn't even necessary.
Did anybody ask him that question? Did he answer?
No, because it would have been illogical to, because he hadn't even heard of GBL. So I think the answer is no. If the court has further questions.
That's some business he got himself into.
Thank you.
Thank you both very much. The case will be taken under advisement. Oh, boy.